Welcome to Wanna Be Clutter Free, the podcast for ambitious moms who are ready to ditch the mess and stress for good. Let's simplify, organize, and create a life you actually love waking up to. Are you ready? Let's do this. Hey there, my friend. Welcome back to the show. My name is Deanna Yates, and you are listening to Wanna Be Clutter Free. On today's episode, I am chatting with Katie Joy Wells, and we are talking about her new book that's coming out this month. And I am so excited to chat with her because we have very similar thoughts and ideas and beliefs about decluttering and minimalism and living clutter-free. And I think it's always just so refreshing when you can hear a different viewpoint, but one that isn't too far off from where, you know, I am and where what the stuff we always talk about every week. So I think you're going to really love this conversation. We talk about what to do to get your partner or your spouse or another adult that lives in your home on board, how to declutter kids' toys, the idea of how dopamine affects our shopping habits. So we get a little nerdy and get into some numbers and things like that. But we also talk about the shoulds that come around decluttering, four different types of clutter that live in your home, how we can overcome sentimental clutter or this generational idea about stuff and how it affects us on a, you know, ongoing level. And so I think you're going to really enjoy it. It's a really great episode, but let me just tell you a little bit about Katie if you don't know who she is. Katie Wells is the author of Making Your Home Your Happy Place, a real life guide to decluttering without the overwhelm. She's created holistic decluttering, an approach that tackles clutter at its roots and pairs it with simple, sustainable systems. As the host of the Maximized Minimalist podcast, it has over 5 million listens, Katie helps families break the cycle of clutter that keeps coming back. Her work has been featured on NBC News Daily, Martha Stewart, Better Homes and Gardens, Real Simple, and more. She lives in Asheville, North Carolina with her husband and their two sons. But before we hop into this conversation, I do want to say a quick thank you to you, of course, for joining me today. You being here allows me to do what I do. And if you like this show, can you do me a huge favor and actually subscribe to it? I have found out that a vast majority of you that listen to the show aren't actually subscribed. And that is the easiest way that you can help this show and support me. And it's free and it's easy and it's simple. And all you have to do is click that button. So please go ahead and do that if you are not already subscribed. And if you are, well, just thank you so much for coming back and listening to the show. I will do my best to bring you amazing interviews. I've got so many lined up. I'm so excited for my first quarter of this year, and it's going to be really great. So, all right, let's hop into this conversation. And don't forget, you can get all of the show notes by clicking below or by going to wannabeclutterfree.com. All right, let's get into it. Well, hey, Katie, welcome to Wanna Be Clutter Free. How you doing today?
Oh, better now that I'm here. Y'all are my people. So I'm even more eager to be on your show today than normal. I love podcast interviews, but there's something special about talking to people who just get it, you know? Yeah. So, yeah.
I get that. So fun, right? There's no one's going to be sitting here going, I don't want to declutter my stuff. I'm going to be like, yes, declutter your stuff. Let's do this. Today's going to be an awesome conversation. We've got so much to talk about. But before we get there, can you tell listeners who you are and what you do in case they don't know?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me. I'm Katie Wells. I am a mama. I got two boys that are now 9 and 10 years old. And I host the Maximized Minimalist podcast. I've had that for about 6 years. And I help families declutter their homes using my method, which is called holistic decluttering. So my background is my husband's a chiropractor by trade. And we came from the kind of holistic wellness world. And we had couple clinics in town for many years while I was struggling with clutter very deeply at home. And after trying a lot of the traditional methods that are really popular and just trying to find like, what's the hack? What's the strategy? What bins do I need? Do I need a rainbow organize my whole life only for it to fall apart 2 days later? I was like, why isn't this working? And I really, thank goodness I had that, I guess, experience in holistic wellness to see like our belief was getting to the root of the problem. And not just focusing on the symptom, which, yes, will get better, you know, your knee pain, your back pain, et cetera. But it's like, let's look at the whole person. And I thought, well, what if I apply that same approach to my home and my struggles with clutter and looked at not just the stuff, but me and my beliefs about stuff and the emotions and how it's making me feel and why I'm struggling. and pairing that with sustainable solutions, because so many of the methods that are still kind of overhyped and oversold require to do it perfectly, require marathon sessions. I'm like, I'm working 60 hours a week. I have two young kids. Like, I can't, this isn't sustainable. And so it was really using those, that approach that really changed the game for me. And within months, I started to feel better in my house. My mental health improved. And I was like, this is it. This is it. It felt so, so, I just craved it. And I know your experience is a little different. Like, you had like the, wow, we are doing this, and like got rid of what, 80% of your stuff really quickly. Yeah. And I think I just had so many deep struggles with clutter, not to say you didn't, but yeah it's just funny how it all worked out. And once I experienced that and continue to maintain that, right? That's the flip side of this that no one talk, that not many people talk about. I know you do. It was a big piece of it. And I was like, I gotta scream this from the mountaintops. Literally, I will go climb a mountain in Asheville and be like, everyone needs to simplify your life.
I love it.
Well, it is interesting though, that maintenance part was the big thing for me too. Like, so yes, we sold we sold 80 to 90% of what we owned. We traveled Europe for 6 months with a one-year-old. And it was when we came back and recluttered a house, thanks to our very generous friends and family, because we had gotten rid of so much stuff and didn't want to spend a ton of money rebuying all of it. But then it was like, why do I feel so bogged down? And so it is just that dichotomy between having nothing, having too much. And what is that middle ground for everyone?
That's right.
And helping people find that middle ground. So I love it. Your book, that's what we're going to talk about today, Making Home Your Happy Place, A Real Life Guide to Decluttering Without the Overwhelm. And I just, it's filled with lots of great tips and help. But it's not like you were saying, that holistic approach is so lovely because it taps into so many other areas of our life. It's not a Band-Aid fix. It's not a hack. It's not a quick, just do this one thing and everything in your life is going to be so much better, where we get sold that all the time. And then when it doesn't work for us, or that one thing just isn't quite it, we feel like, what is wrong with us? And that's what I liked about this. It is that breath of fresh air of like, oh, okay, we can do this and you're going to help us through it. And so you share that there was a time when keeping things tidy and on top of clutter actually kept you from facing what was happening in your real life. And I loved that you started with this, because it was really like a real point of life. And so for listeners who are high functioning, capable, and exhausted, how can decluttering quietly become that coping mechanism instead of the solution?
Yeah, this is, like you said, the moment in time where I was like, oh gosh. So what you're talking about is a time where I was so stuck on this hamster wheel of taking one step forward, 10 steps back with decluttering. And it's like, there's this moment in time where I was like, if I weren't constantly stressed in my home, busy moving things around, reorganizing for the 18th time, trying to declutter, all these things, what would I be feeling in my body right now? And I think most of us recognize, as I did, I hated my house. I hated the stuff in it. It stressed me out. I showed up as a different mom, completely different, happy, bubbly mom outside my house. The second I walked through my front door, I was like ragey, triggered. I mean, it impacted my relationship with my kids, my husband. I felt so much shame about that. And through this process, I think a lot of us can see how it's negatively impacting me. But this moment where I was like, if I weren't constantly busy dealing with clutter and being distracted by clutter, again, what would I have to feel? I'd have to feel grief I hadn't processed. Like, it makes me cry. I had abandoned so many dreams. I think so many of us moms do. And yes, it's for a temporary season. At times I was unhappy. I had so much anxiety in my life. I was so depressed, no matter how much talk therapy I tried, and I was like, I don't have to feel those things deeply if I'm always distracted by the junk in my house. And, that's where I was like, in a strange sense, as chaotic as clutter is, it was protecting me from having the opportunity to address those head on and process those in an appropriate way. And I think that's why decluttering is so powerful, right? It gives us these opportunities to look within, look to see what we want, look to see who we really are. And, you know, that can feel equally liberating and also terrifying in a mix of both, you know. And I think that stillness that we experience along the way, not at the end, not when your house is done, you can experience this. Just go declutter for 5 minutes. You'll feel more calm, more ease, more stillness. When that stillness gets exposed through the means of decluttering, it's like it exposes what that stimulation was kind of medicating, you know, like that constant noise. So I think it's not for everybody. I mean, this isn't everyone's story, but I will say for a lot of us, whenever I talk about it, people are like, oh yeah, like I hear that. Sometimes clutter is just clutter. Like life got busy, systems fell off the wagon, you get back on. But there is this reality at play here that we are so accustomed to staying constantly behind, more on our to-do list, more tasks, more noise, more clutter. And it's like, what would your life look and feel like if you didn't have that? I think it's an interesting question for all of us.
Very interesting question. And I think what you were talking about there, though, you also bring up as expected mess in your home, yeah. Right? There are expected messes. Life is going to get busy. You're in a busy season. Maybe your kids are, you know, both playing a sport and you're constantly shuffling everyone back and forth. And it's a busy time in your work career, you know, in the work cycle that you're in right now. And so we have these moments maybe where we have these expected messes, and that differs from clutter, right?
Yes. Yes. Again, life-changing for me. I would clear the countertops, follow the checklist, and then the mess would come back. And I think I'll speak for myself, but I've worked with a lot of families and a lot of women and moms, and it's kind of feels like a personal attack after a while, after it repeats day after day. Like, why am I the only one that cares? Why am I the only one that deals with this? Like, and when we're constantly comparing ourselves to the end goal of a perfect home or a minimalist home or what we think that where that goalpost should be for us, we live in this gap between how we're living, what it looks like, and what we want and desire, what we're being sold. And in that gap, so much shame tends to live. What's wrong with me? Why can't I figure this out? You know how many times I asked myself that? And it wasn't just like in passing. It was like I would just burst into tears. Why can't I figure this out? I'm a smart person. What's wrong with me? Why am I the only one that struggles with clutter? I used to think that constantly. Nobody, why? And just like you said, when you teed up our conversation, finding that harmony between, you don't have to be a minimalist. You can have more than one pair of shoes. You don't, like, I still love clothes. I still love clothes. Just because I decluttered and have a simplified wardrobe doesn't mean I don't like shopping. So it's just like, let's just play to the reality and have a little more, you know, realistic aspect to it. But yes, clutter is optional. This is what I tell my people. Clutter is optional. Expected mess is not. Expected mess is a natural byproduct of being a living, breathing human being. Think about the best things in life. Think about how you spent your time this weekend. What did I do last weekend? I played cards with my kids, made a mess. We had snacks. We had popcorn, made a mess. Oh, wow. Of having a good time, right? We had family together. We made dishes. We made dirty dishes. We cooked together. And it's like the thing we're taught to fear is that all mess and clutter is the same thing. They're not. But also that mess is to be feared. Like, oh, like you're failing if your kitchen gets dirty again. Mess, that expected mess is cyclical. Yeah. And there are simple habits. A lot of us already do these resets where you reset that expected mess so it brings your cortisol down, so your home feels better. You feel more calm at ease. These are important things to do as part of home management and just so you feel good in your home. But I think that looking at expected mess is the same as clutter, and giving language to something that didn't exist released that shame. And as Brené Brown says, when we are stuck in shame, hope feels impossible. And when I was able to release that shame and understand this isn't the end goal, is to have a 24/7 perfectly tidy home, it's not possible. I'm setting the goalpost for what I want my home to be like. And instead of focusing on what my home looked like, as all the magazines and all the experts were showing, I was like, how do I want to feel in my home? I don't want a perfectly tidy home 24/7. It's not anyone's reality. I don't care who you are, how much you have. I want an easy to tidy home. So I set my own benchmark and I got there, and I still do the same things I did to get me there for maintenance. So it's just so unburdening to drop that end goal that was never yours probably to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah. I had someone on the podcast recently, Ashley Hines, and she talked about whenever you use the word should, you're basically just embodying someone else's belief and thought. Like, I should have a house that looks this way or that way. Why? Because the magazine says I should. Pinterest says I should. This influencer on Instagram says I should.
Yep.
Right. And what is it that I want to feel? I love that that's how you brought it back to, because it is a feeling. Your home is your place. It's supposed to be where you and your family can thrive and connect and recharge, and your sanctuary away from the crazy of whatever's happening outside of your home. And it doesn't have to look a certain way to feel that way. How do you want it to feel and function for you?
Yeah.
I love that you brought it to that. Absolutely. Because that's so much more important and so much. It's not easier to get to, but it will feel so much more aligned with who you are.
Yes.
When you stop trying to like make it fit into this mold that everyone says it should be. So, yeah, I love that.
Yeah. Well, my husband came.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
No, what were you saying?
Well, I'll share this because people are equally amazed and maybe horrified and will maybe, I don't know. So my husband came on the show recently and we were just having an honest conversation about clutter stuff, sentimentality, and the state of our house right now. And he's like, if you walked into our home, you would not know that Katie is a declutter expert. And part of me, like if this were years ago and I were a little more like concerned, I'd be like, wow, way to like ruin my business there, bud. And he doesn't mean like, oh my gosh, crazy how much clutter we've let go of over the years. Like, that's not what he means. What he means is we still have messes in our home. And we have these transitions and these seasons of life as parents, right? Like, our kids are growing up. They have new interests. And stuff is going out that they're no longer interested in. And stuff is coming in, right? And there's kind of this influx of things right now. So our garage is like super messy as we're trying to figure out how to organize, how to store it, what systems we need in place. And I want to share that because I feel like any expert I was learning from back in the day made it so like I was like, I have to not be me if I'm going to be successful and follow these things. And again, it's anchoring yourself down to your core values. I don't care. Any declutter expert could come into my house and be like, this could be better. And this is, who cares? I don't care. It's good enough. And my whole philosophy is the good enough home. And again, anchoring to how I want to feel in my home. Does my home make my life easier or harder? Does my home reflect the purpose I have for it? Yes, yes, yes. It doesn't have to be perfect to do that. Your home does not need to look like a Pottery Barn ad to love and support and nurture you and your family. And I think that is like, even just saying that, I mean, is like the opposite of what we breathe in through social media, culture, TV shows, all the things.
Right. Because marketers want to sell you that you can have this lifestyle. If you just buy this couch, you too will have lovely movie nights where you all sit there and cuddle together and nobody's trying to be distracted by their phone or nobody's fighting. The kids are not poking at each other. If you buy this couch.
That's right. And there will be no popcorn spilled on this couch.
No. Never, never any ice cream droppings or any of the things, whatever. But it comes back to what you said there, though, that it makes me a better mom. And I call them my three P's. It makes me a better person. It makes me a better partner. And it makes me a better parent. And it helps me show up how I want to show up when I'm not stressed out and my stuff is not taking my attention away. And I have totally felt exactly in that moment of like, oh boy, if someone walked in my house right now, you know, I'm a decluttering expert. I'm your decluttering cheerleader. I just decluttered 500 things from my house.
Yes.
How is that possible? Like, it just is what it is. It's just maintenance. And the things I said, you know, look, for those that are really good at the, you know, one in, one out, and you are a staunch minimalist, that's great. But for us mere mortals that just live in the real world, things just come in and those cycles of life that you were talking about just show up. And you have to then say, I can either run myself ragged and be crazy and stay on top of all of this stuff like I'm a military, you know, like we're running this like a military, or I can just ebb and flow with it and be okay. We live in San Diego and we do not have air conditioning. So come summer, grilling outside isn't just preferred, it is absolutely required. I will not add one more degree of heat to this house if I can help it. And grilling nights work best when quality protein is already in the freezer, ready to go. The nights it's not, well, that's when dinner becomes a chaotic scramble. So I just ordered from Omaha Steaks, and I went straight for the Burger Perfection flight because my husband and daughter, well, they have declared themselves official beef burger connoisseurs, and we're doing a family taste test. 20 pure ground beef burgers made from 5 different cuts of steak, filet mignon, New York strip, ribeye, brisket, and sirloin. Each burger is ground from a single cut, not blended. It's steakhouse quality without the steakhouse price. Omaha Steaks has spent over 100 years perfecting this. Every cut of meat arrives vacuum sealed, flash frozen, and ready to go the moment you need it. No scrambling, no guessing. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99, plus get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. With the fact that I have to have a little more creativity in this time, or a little more leeway and give, and come back to it when I can.
That's right. Beautiful sentiment. Yeah. 100% agree, for sure.
All right. So if many of us are thinking with these kinds of ideas of like, if I could just get my house under control, everything else would be easier, which is kind of what we're saying. It has helped us a lot. When clutter is actually the signal of something deeper, like as you were saying, like sometimes clutter is just expected mess, but sometimes it is deeper and it's covering something up. Where do you suggest people start without feeling overwhelmed? Because that I can understand people would be like, but I'm really scared to go deeper.
Yeah, you don't start with the deeper stuff. I always to say, like, that's like going into the gym and trying to bench press 50 pounds when you've not bench pressed 10. You know, it's like, yes, we might hear in this episode, oh, yeah, some of that stuff she was saying. Like, you don't need to do hours of talk therapy, hours of journaling or self-reflection. It's not necessary. What we need to create is spark, belief in yourself, and that's done through taking action. So I teach that there are 4 main clutter types. So, yes, you might recognize you have sentimental clutter. Yes, you might have a bunch of sentimental clutter sitting in your guest bedroom or the office or garage that's kind of nagging you, and it's telling you, deal with me, but that doesn't mean we start there, right? So we start with superficial clutter, the easy low-hanging fruit. Why? Because there's no emotional charge. There's no mental negotiation tactics. Your brain's like, but this costs money. Well, that could be useful, or you might need that one day. No. None of it. Like, this is where, like, again, what you've been doing, the 500 things, you know, trash bag challenges, anything, set a timer for 5 minutes. This is a type of clutter we tackle first. The junk drawer, the expired coupons, like the nasty, like rotten spinach that's been in my, you know, fridge for I bought in my wellness era. Like, this is what we're doing. Like, the easy stuff. This is where we should start. But most people stop there because they feel better. They feel that boost. The counters are clear. They feel that physiological, like, even just saying it, I feel better. Gosh, this is how intricately connected we are to our physical environments, y'all. Just talking about it, I feel better. Right? Yeah. So when you clear the that first layer, 2 things happen. Again, you're building momentum. You're not waiting for motivation to strike. Right. You prove to yourself you can do this, and you create that breathing room and that calmer place, the physiological response. Like, then you slowly get ready to face those deeper layers. And I think, too, when those layers come, you're going to know, because your brain's going to try to negotiate the situation. And I would just encourage everyone. So many of us really ruminate when it comes to decluttering. I'll tell you what I thought.
Okay.
How did I let it get so bad? I can't believe myself. I've wasted so much money on this stuff, and now I'm just supposed to get rid of it. Man, I stink at this. I don't think I'll ever be able to do this. I ruminate. We have to activate. So taking action. And when you hear these thoughts, your brain's like, Katie, you stink. I can't believe you. Oh, you can say, hey, you know what? I did the best I could with what I had. I still tell myself this as a parent. We all are doing the best we can. And it doesn't mean I'm a failure. It means I'm learning. And in that growth, whether it's whatever, wellness, mental health, decluttering, in that growth, that discomfort, we get to challenge that. And I would just encourage you to meet those, whatever your brain is telling you, with curiosity instead of judgment, right? We have to just, hey, you know what? I'm not a failure. Life got away. I didn't know. I didn't have the right methods. There's always time to start. So again, I just want to reiterate, start with the easy stuff. And every time you let something go or add something to your donation bin, it is a vote for who you are becoming. I can do this. I am capable, which is so, so powerful for anyone who especially doesn't feel capable when you're ruminating and looking around.
Yeah.
Take action.
Take action. Yeah. And you said right there, don't wait for motivation. And it is the action that will create the motivation. Because if I didn't do anything until I felt like doing it, you know, you're probably just on the couch. You end up doom scrolling. You end up just, you know, that whole Netflix binge where it's like, are you still here? OMG. Like, of course, you just have to get up and do something. And that's when the motivation will come. So yeah, I'm a firm believer of what you just said. And yes, start with the easy stuff. Don't start with, you know, your photos or your grandma's heirlooms or anything like that. That's a recipe for disaster of just sitting there. And because trust me, I've done that before, right? I think most of us have probably tried this and you go, okay, that doesn't work. No wonder. Like, I'm now sitting in this mess and I've got all this stuff about me and I've been sitting here for 2 hours and I'm no better off than I was before. So yeah, absolutely. And something I loved that you talked about was you talked about the stories that we attach to our belongings. So going to these more sentimental pieces and how many of those stories aren't even ours in the first place. Mm-hmm. And so can you walk us through how family history, culture, generational patterns quietly shape what we keep? Because you talked about that in the book and I thought it was very interesting.
Thank you. So your stuff story is really the invisible script that shapes how you relate to things. I used to say your belongings, but really it also impacts what you buy, you know, let alone what you keep, what you struggle to let go of, why you look at something as clutter and your partner's like, that's not clutter. And you're like, what? Are we literally not looking at the same, like, hello, you know? And often, like you said, and read in the book, like, we don't necessarily choose this consciously. It's inherited. And it comes from three main places. So number one, what you grew up with, who you grew up with. Maybe your parents, for example, saved everything because they lived through scarcity and waste felt shameful, or their family motto was waste not, want not, right? These types of things we're learning from our physical environments and the relationships we have impact the way. And that could mean like you not letting go of anything, or it could mean you go so far the other way because of that experience. So it's not so like, you know, concrete. But the second is your own lived experiences. It's so big. So, you know, if you went through, if you had job loss, if you had financial insecurity, if you lost your home in a flood or a fire, chances are it's going to be more difficult for you to let go of things in the future because of that one lived experience. And the third is cultural messaging. That is so big, like we talked about, what we've been told since childhood through watching the cereal commercials for like Cocoa Pebbles. It was like, I get a toy and I'm going to feel happy and I'm going to eat Cocoa Pebbles and be enjoy this new toy and I'm going to feel so good until what? That toy, I don't care about it anymore. I want the next one. And it's like full closets, full calendars, full lives. Like, culture really teaches us to fear emptiness, to fear rest, to fear space. And it's like, I'm telling you, I'll just say this because this has been on my mind a lot lately. You have to declutter this belief that I think so many of us women absorb through culture, that rest is laziness and that productivity and like we got to go, 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 go. And here's why I say this. When I started making progress in my home through the means of these methods we're talking about, within months, I started to notice, wow, you know, like resets and cleanups at the end of the day aren't taking quite as long. But my body and mind were so used to being compulsively overwhelmed, stressed, and busy. And I was like, there must be something else. Be optimized. Get more done. Start this. And it was like this anxious compulsiveness to keep being productive because my body and nervous system weren't used to the space. And in those moments, I literally had to retrain my nervous system. It's okay. Feel the emptiness, the 2 minutes, sit down, light a candle, read, start a freaking book, you know? And it's like, I just think that's so important for all of us to hear and remind ourselves of, because it is a hamster wheel if we are not careful with how we're spending our time and, you know, our belief system. So all that to say, those three pillars really impact and kind of weave the fabrication of what we believe about stuff. And it's not to place blame. It's not to be like, well, forget it. I guess I'll just be like this forever. But it's to bring that to light because we can't change what we can't see and what's behind the curtain.
Right. It takes one, you know, you take one thing and you replace it with another, right? And we don't want to do that. We're not trying to replace the busyness with a different kind of busyness. We want to, we're decluttering and letting go of our stuff so that we have room to breathe, so that we can live the life we want, so that we can show up and be our full intentional selves. And it is so easy in this day and age where we are sold and told to hustle and just keep going and, you know, dig in and wake up at 5 a.m. and, you know, be as productive as you can be. And we are not robots and we are humans. And
not
so,
yet.
Yeah. Not yet. Oh, God. Don't make me a robot.
I know. Our humanness is going to be even more important over this next however many years. That's for sure. Like these authentic conversations and like, you know, it matters. It really does.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. Well, we're going to have to get into that on a different day. I'll have to have you back and we'll talk about that. I'll be interested to hear your thoughts on the AI, IT, you know, robotization of the world.
That's right.
Yeah. So let's say people are holding on to things out of obligation, especially when it comes to items that are passed down. We'll stay on this kind of sentimental approach for a moment. What is one compassionate way you've helped people untangle the meaning from the object without feeling like we're doing it wrong or we're not really honoring those stories?
So when we keep things out of obligation, oftentimes, so that's what I talk about this in the sentimental clutter chapter. That's what I call guilt clutter, kind of masquerading as sentimental because, right, it came from someone. It was inherited, whether we wanted it or not, you know, intentionally wanted it. Maybe we just ended up with it or we picked it out, whatever. It was a gift. And I think there's a simple way to tell the difference. Is this true sentimentality or is this guilt? And that's literally just saying, like, pick up your great aunt Linda's vase, whatever, pull it out of storage and go, if it weren't for guilt, would I still keep this? And there's your answer, right? If you're keeping this out of an obligation, again, going back to the stories we tell ourselves, I was so paralyzed by going through all the jewelry I inherited from my grandmother when she passed away. And I didn't recognize it because these thoughts that we have are running in the background. Right. Yeah. They're running in the background and they're running the show. They're like 50 tabs back, but it was keeping me paralyzed. Why? I literally just said, Katie, what's the deal? What are you telling yourself about letting go of some of grandma's jewelry and trying to curate? And I said, I feel like I'd be a bad granddaughter if she knew. I mean, she'd been passed for many years, but I feel like, well, what if my mom asked me what I did with that jewelry? What's she going to think of me? So we have this external pressure and judgment we anticipate getting perhaps from family members, plus the pressure we put on ourselves. We're literally equating moral value to letting go of some grandma's jewelry that, heck, she probably didn't even wear or like, you know? And I think, again, is it true guilt clutter? Is it sentimental clutter? If it's sentimental, you can ask yourself. So I talk about the ARC framework. We'll cover that super quick, but it's an acronym. So A from ART stands for asking yourself questions, right? So why have I kept this? What does it represent? What am I telling the story about? Is the story even true? I am not a bad granddaughter for letting go of some of this jewelry that I randomly inherited for my grandmother. It doesn't mean I love her less because I'm letting some of this go to someone who will actually love and use it and wear it, I hope. And I think naming it and just bringing that to the light, right, front and center to your conscious helps you loosen its grip. Then you can also go into repurpose. I think sometimes, yes, things can live in a box. You open it once a year. I do that every year on my birthday. I have one sentimental bin. I go through physical photos. My kids sit with me and they're like, look at how cute you were when you were 8. And I'm like, I know, I was so cute, right? And like and a few little medals and badges, like things like those have that emotion there. And I love going back to that time. I think that aversion loss is what so many people fear when they're trying to let go of clutter, because it's our brain equating letting go with losing and pain, and our brain doesn't like to feel pain. Again, we're wired for survival. No one wants to be like, oh, I'm losing something. And so sometimes if it doesn't belong in a box, or you want to honor that item differently, if it's truly sentimental, you truly love it, maybe you display that vase on your mantle. Maybe it becomes part of your seasonal decor. Maybe you bring it, that photo in the frame, out at Christmas. And I think what's cool is sometimes honoring that and letting the object do what you want it to do anyway, which is remind you of, like, I cry, like, a really special time, a really special person, a really special feeling you had in your life. Man, I look at those badges. I used to run track and I was like, oh, I remember feeling so fast and like my parents being so proud, which honestly, I mean, like, huh? You remember when your like parents feel proud? You're like, I want to hold that feeling forever. We want to please our parents. And, you know, I think that's really special to, you know, how can we weave that in if it makes sense and integrate that into our life? Okay. And then the final step is T, time. Time can do so much of the heavy lifting for us. There are like I curated my sentimental bins from, I don't know, 10 to 1, not overnight, not through a marathon purge, through grace, through permission to do it slow and letting time do the heavy lifting. Because as you get older, as we hopefully get wiser, as we hopefully get more intentional about what's serving us and what's not, we'll naturally reopen that box. And what used to tug at our heartstrings isn't so meaningful anymore because we've changed, we've evolved, and I believe our stuff should evolve right along with us. So if you're not ready, don't put pressure on yourself. Let time do the heavy lifting again and work on some of the easier layers first. Scarcity, superficial, of course, start with superficial. And I just want to, you know, say something out loud that a lot of us feel pressure to like go from being super like I have to become a different person. I can't be sentimental in order to make progress. 1000% not true. I think you can curate. I think my motto with sentimentality and those types of things is going from I'm a collector of sentimental things to I'm a curator. If you walk into a museum, you're not looking at a collection of artwork just hobgobbed up there with no rhyme or reason. You are looking at the result of an art curator who went through hundreds or thousands of paintings and put these up in a very specific way to elicit feelings, to tell a story. This is what we can do in our homes, right? With sentimental things. And I think that's a really cool permission slip to do it on your timeline in a way that works for you without having to be like, well, how many sentimental track badges can I have? How many physical photos can I have? Right? These are the questions I used to read on these minimalist blogs. How many shoes am I allowed to have? Do I have to digitize everything? Right? It's like, no, girl, no. The goal isn't to just get rid of everything. It's to it's to curate what matters and helps your life.
Beautiful sentiment. I absolutely love that you go through your sentimental box on your birthday. I think that is so precious. I think that might be an activity I'm going to have to adopt into my own life. I love that idea. And I also love how the idea of the curation versus the collection, and that helps you see, actually, as you were talking about it, it helped me really think about my friends and loved ones who actually have a lot of stuff, but their home doesn't necessarily feel cluttered. And it's because it's curated. My niece, she lives in a small home, but she has so much stuff on her walls. But we were just there visiting not too long ago, and it doesn't feel cluttered because she's curated. She loves to, you know, thrift and find secondhand and find these little fun things. But she's discerning. She has a discerning eye about what she chooses to put on her walls. And so I think that might be the distinction between somebody who has the ability to have more stuff, you know, a lot of stuff, whatever, versus, you know, somebody who feels like, oh, I can't have all this stuff. And it's just this idea that it's just you have to be intentional about what you keep. And once you make that switch, I think it really will help open you up. And it's funny that you actually mentioned a vase. I have a vase back here that was my grandfather's. He had like that carnival glass, and everybody in our family got one piece of it. And so we kind of got to choose a little bit about what piece we wanted. And I love that vase. And I love having it on display. And it reminds me of so much more than just that vase. And so many of the things that are on that wall are the same. Actually, pretty much everything on that wall is the same thing. Each piece has a story to it, right? It is a curated selection from my life. And that's what I want to surround myself with. So I love how you said that. It's just with that lens of intention, and it doesn't have to be so methodical, because I got into that trapping of minimalism, right? Of thinking like, oh, I can only have so much stuff. And it also then felt like stuff was controlling me just from the opposite side.
Yes. 1000%. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So, so good. I could keep talking to you all day. I'm going to keep asking you a few more questions. I don't want you to go.
Let's go.
Yeah, more. So let's say you are on board with this, you know, less stuff approach. But of course, we're not the only ones living in our homes, right?
We're not. Oh, man.
We're not. Man. It's not just us. We have other people there, and they make our lives so much better. But sometimes they do drive us a little crazy when it comes to our stuff, which you do talk about in the book. You have some really fun stories and examples, and so I won't spoil it because I want you all to go read these moments. But what is one way you talk about onboarding the other adults in your home? And I just thought that was a lovely way to approach it versus just this forcing everybody.
What
in.
We like, really want to do? Like, yeah. Just oh, trust me. I tried that.
All right. So tell us more about this approach.
Yes. So my husband, Andrew, when I really got into decluttering, was not on board for a nuance of reasons. I really tried. It was like trying to force a square peg into a round hole. Hmm. And I could lecture and explain until my face was blue. And he was still like, what? And we'll talk about what does work. But I think one of the first kind of foundational aspects is understanding you can't make someone else care. You can't make your kid care automatically. Just because you care about decluttering, it's February. They'll be like, yeah, she'll ride that way for a few more weeks and then we don't have to care about it, you know? And we can't change people. It's an unfortunate truth to being a human being. But you can create conditions that make change easier. Again, going back to the overarching concept that we are intricately connected to our physical environments. So setting up things in your home to make it easy to do what you want your adult, your partner to do, your kids to do. Put a donation station somewhere easily accessible and visible. If their room is a disaster, simply putting a donation bin in there, telling them what it's for. I had a client who was like, Katie, I've been nagging my husband for months to tackle his closet and he just won't do it. And I said, put a donation station literally right inside his closet. Make it so easy for him. There's no friction. Reduce all friction points, which is he would have to go all the way downstairs if he wanted to put something in their donation bin. No one's going to do that. That's not how humans work, okay? We have to play on human biology here. So she put it in and she said, hey, honey, anything you don't want, put in here and we'll run it to Goodwill Sunday. That's all she said. No nagging, no tears, no blue in the face. She came up to bed that night, opened his closet. It was filled. It was filled, right? A classic example, when you make it easy to do what you want it to do based on how you set up the environment. So that's step one. Yeah. I know you read the book, but that's designed for follow through. That's really the whole concept. It can work. And sometimes it does take other stuff, right? So starting with your own stuff, boy, I nagged my husband. I was pointing, but as they say, when you point at someone else, you got three fingers pointing back at you. We are all incredibly, yeah. We are like gold star Olympic medalists for identifying other people's clutter in our homes.
Totally.
Girl, I was like, it's the kids, my kids. They're like ruining this house. It's my husband and his collections and his clothes from college. Like, holy box, like get rid of your holy boxers that are 20 years old. Like, I can't handle it. But look at me. I was like, I'm part of the problem. So instead
I'm the first person to dump stuff on a flat surface.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Expected mess, right? So yeah. Starting with my own stuff is what I eventually shifted to after all those other things. I hadn't known about the physical environment aspect I shared with you too. Good stop. But starting with your own stuff, modeling the behavior you want to see. And I think too, going back to feeling, how do you want your home to feel? Oftentimes our partners and our adults in our home don't understand the what because they don't understand the why. So the what is decluttering. What do they hear? Well, you want me to what? I don't want to do that. Stop. That takes time. I want to hang out with the kids. I want to go on a hike. I want to ride my bike. I want to work in the garage. Nobody wants to do chores just to do chores. Right. What? Hello? www.whatsinitforme.com. This is where we all live. Our heads are like, well, why would I do that? So instead, share the why behind it. Share your big why. Why do you want a simpler life? Hey, honey, I've noticed that it takes us 30 minutes to pick up the kids' toys every night. This is a true story. 30 minutes, Andrew and I together. I'm getting mad. We are keeping score on chores. We're resentful. This is really impacting me. I'm like a She-Hulk mom inside this house. Something's got to give. Yeah. And I would love your support. Even if you don't have the capacity to declutter with me, a golf clap, an acknowledgement. Hey, honey, I see you doing this work. I literally told him that's it. And at first he was like, okay, like I will support you and do the golf clap. And I was like, okay, fine. But then going back to the feeling, he felt, started feeling different in my home, as I did. He's like, wow, when I get home from work, like, you're not a basket case, and I can see the floor. I have a spot for my shoes. I can actually, like, hang my bag on the hooks because there's not so much clutter. Like, wow, I'm... And there's no amount of logic, checklist, explaining that can do what feeling the benefit experiences. And I feel like so many adults, understanding the why, setting up the environment to do what you want them to do, and doing these things, it's really like all these simple but nuanced things that can really onboard people into doing what we want them to do. Because we know, know what's right, you know?
Well, at least we can all try it, right? And it's interesting. There is a study that I saw one time or read about one time where it was they wanted to encourage people to drink more water. So all they did was instead of putting the water behind the, you know, refrigerator door, they just put it in baskets right by the checkout, and more people bought the water. And it's right just in front. Simple changes. And like you said, in your closet, the thing our brain wants to do is, oh, I didn't like that. I'm just going to fold it up and put it back on the shelf because I don't have to move my feet to do that. I'm right here. It's the easiest thing for me to do. So if the easiest thing isn't actually folding, because instead of folding, I can just drop it in a bin, that's easier than having to do that step of just putting it back in your closet. So I totally see how that works. And I love that suggestion. It is, you know, just so simple and yet life-changing. Like, can totally change your home with a box. Like, it's so crazy. Like, it's just so simple. So simple.
We overcomplicate. We're like, what's the 16-page, 82-step system I need? And then it's like, well, I can't do that. Or you do it for a day, and then you're like, this isn't sustainable. Just put a box, a permanent donation bin in your house. I can't even describe. I agree. I use mine still constantly. I put one in my closet as just, hey, like, this is something that evolves with me, especially like as I'm like, I just turned 38. I feel like the last 5 years, like, I'm like, I'm like, who am I? How do I want to dress? What's my style? I'm not 20 anymore. Like, it's just a gentle encourager, reminder. And it's not like this drudgery task. It's like, hey, I've bypassed this blouse for 6 months now. What's the deal? I've had the opportunity to wear it, but I haven't. Well, all right, I'm ready to let it go. Boom, into the donation box. There's no, oh, I don't have time to declutter right now, or I'll get to it later. Boom, no, made it easy for me to do what I want to do.
Yeah. Oh, so true. So very true. All right, let's talk about the kids. You talked about how you were spending 30 minutes a night even just tidying your kids' toys. So many of my listeners, moms, they're like, hey, look, the toys are a nightmare. So how have you helped your kids declutter toys?
Well, when they were itty bitty, I started super simple. I think the ultimate end goal is to help build and teach decluttering and household management and ownership over your stuff. These are life skills, right? And so, you know, when they were 3, 4, it became like me sitting down and helping them put away toys. So from, again, before they were readers, I was like, let's put picture labels up so they know where things go. Make it easy for you to do what you want them to do. When they became readers, you swap it out for words. Here's where your Duplos go. Here's where your Magnetic goes. Getting them into the rhythm of this is something we do. It's like becomes part of the family culture. And of course, you know, keeping in mind things like decluttering, putting away, organizing, cleaning your room, these all require a ton of executive function in our prefrontal cortex that fully develop, that takes 25 years to fully develop. So I think some of us need to check our expectations a bit, and our kids do depend on us to model the behavior and for us to support them through building those skills. And also too, I think just regular communication with my kids, whether it's proactive, reactive, in a family meeting or something. When they got a little bit older, we started doing family meetings and helping them understand, like, this is not my responsibility. I did not want to be a mom who felt resentful, I didn't want to be that mom anymore. And so I thought, why don't I just turn this into a team, a teamwork? So if any time something comes up in our home, let's just say some habits fell off the rail and backpacks are ending up in the living room where they don't belong and it's stressing me out, I would say something like, hey kids, I've noticed that Your backpacks are ending up in the living room the last week. I understand it's been busy with sports and everything. How can I help you, or what do you need from me, or how can we do this together? Figure out a way to make sure that those land, maybe not, you know, where they go the first time, but at the end of the night when we're resetting, back where they go. Yeah. And again, it's like sports casting. You're not being like, you did this, I'm tired of telling you. You're not, I wasn't nagging. Trust me, I tried all those things. But when you do it from that perspective, it's not like you did something wrong, mom's mad again, or we are supposed to care because she cares. How can we do this together? And again, painting the why behind it. Why does it matter? Well, when your backpacks aren't on the floor, guess what we can do on the floor? You can wrestle with dad. We can play Uno. We can play solitaire. All three of us, we like to play cards, and we'll play individually next to each other. We can't do what we want to do in our living room when there's stuff in the way. It's not clutter. It's expected mess, but it's still in the way. Yeah. And I think on board, inviting them into the process, when you're decluttering, tell them how you decided what to let go of. Take them to the donation. Take them to the charity. Take them to meet the people you're donating those their old kids' clothes to, if that aligns. Everyone's different. But I think inviting them, just invite them into the process and ongoing conversations, modeling what you want to see, and helping them build that life skill. That's a lot. One thing at a time.
And it doesn't have to be everything all at once. And it doesn't have to be these, you know, big giant swooping or just moments of like in-depth conversations. Be like, hey, you know what? It's hard for mom to get down and play with you, like you just said, when there's stuff everywhere. So let's spend 5 minutes, set a timer, let's race and, you know, do a little cleanup. And then you reward them with that fun mom you wanted to be, right? That you said you wanted to be, and like let them see that progression. Absolutely. Yeah.
That's right. Yep. Yeah. Again, kids are no different. It's like, why do I care about cleaning up? Mom seems like she's in a better mood, but we can get outside. We can take a longer hike after dinner if the house is clean, because we want to come back to a clean house. Here's why. You know, and just I think voicing that out loud, a lot of the things we're thinking in our heads. But again, it's just I always tell myself, invite them in.
Yeah. Well, and also comes back to what you were saying earlier about those running medals and how it made you remember how proud your parents were of you and how much you as a child wanted to make your parent proud. So how, you know, factor that into it too. Your kids want to make you happy. They want to make you proud of them. And you know, use that feedback to help you while you're doing this kind of stuff as well. So yeah, absolutely. Full circle moment. All right. We're not going to get to my dopamine question unless you're okay to stick around for a little bit longer.
Yes, let's do it.
Okay. All right. So the last question I have for you before we wrap up and do the rapid fire ones at the end is this idea about dopamine. And you make this distinction about what dopamine actually is and how it affects us, because so many of us have been told it's the happy hormone, right? It's dopamine's what that happiness hit that you are like striving for. And that's what happens when we shop. We get this hit of dopamine, and you look at it from a different angle, scientifically proven. So what is the difference of dopamine that we have not been told yet?
I'm just thinking about, I love Dr. Andrew Huberman, and I listen to his show a lot. He's a great show. And I remember hearing him talk about dopamine being the motivation molecule. So sorry, I was just laughing because I like to geek out and nerd out. Hopefully y'all can just appreciate that for a moment. But again, a lot of what I teach, my philosophy, what we're talking about, I would describe as brain-based decluttering. Like everything, it's like the biology piece that's overlooked, the psychology piece. I'm like, no, we're not doing, like we're human again. So let's play to being a human. So like you said, a lot of people think like, oh, I go shopping, I get dopamine. But dopamine is really about it's what motivates you to go shop. It's what motivates you to add to cart. It's like this desire. And there's this interesting piece that I think a lot of us feel shame or discomfort or embarrassment or frustration around, like that desire to shop, that desire to maybe fill a void with shopping. But that desire, again, it's coming from human biology. You can't take that out of you. I think the problem is when shopping becomes the primary way that we regulate our emotions, which for me, I was decluttering with one hand and I was shopping with the other for like the first solid year. And I was like, I should be further along as I'm like on Amazon. Like, what? I'm so touched out by my kids. I'm so overwhelmed. There's too much chaos in the world. I need to feel in control. And shopping, a lot of us recognize when we shop because we're stressed or we're bored or it's impulse, whatever. Yeah. But I think for especially now, I don't know if it's just me, the world feels so out of control. And when and there's this false sense of security and false sense of control that comes through buying. It's like, well, I can't control what's going on in the world, but I can buy something, you know, and lean into that dopamine. So again, going back to all of it goes back to awareness first, breaking that cycle. If you want to start working on your shopping habits, what am I really trying to fill here? What do I really need? What's the true need I'm trying to meet through this surface level solution? Now, honestly, for a lot of us, it's just maybe a habit we need to work on, drop, modify. And for me, it was like, I need to do something for myself. And that can't be through shopping anymore. I'm not saying I never impulse shop. I'm not saying like I'm way better than I used to, by the way. Way, eons better. But again, progress, not perfection. Yeah. I was like, I need to like literally go outside and take 2 minutes and take a walk and feel like I don't have 100 pounds of kids crawling on me. I need to remember what it feels like to do squats and move my muscles. I need to go drink some water out of my Yeti cup that's been sitting on my counter for, you know, 2 months. I haven't had water in 2 months. Like, what do I need right now? What do I really need? You know? Right. And again, it's like this cyclical, we shop, we buy more, we feel like, oh, I got the thing. And then when is enough enough? It never happens. I mean, hello, I'm a big fan of Real Housewives. I tell my husband every week, I am that person who's like, okay, Beverly Hills is on every Friday. And he's like, why are you wasting your life? And I said, this is an educational TV show. You know how much content I get from this? I'm not a therapist. I'm not a psychologist. I am like breaking down. Oh, this is identity clutter. Oh, look at her. She's trying to flash her luxury brand because she's trying to make a stance, you know, and like, it's true. It's true. It's so about true. What the stuff represents, how we feel when we buy it. You're not just buying a luxury purse. You're buying something that represents success, achievement. Right. I am valuable. I make a lot of money. And I'm not saying these are inherently bad. This is the human nature we're dealing with. We're not just buying toothpaste. I don't care if you buy Colgate or whatever else is out there. I'm on Sensodyne because I'm getting old, apparently, and my teeth are getting sensitive. I used to think it was only for 80-year-olds. It is not, people. Apparently, when you hit like late 30s, your teeth get sensitive. So, girl, I'm on Sensodyne. I'm going to be on denture toothpaste before we know it. The point is, we don't just buy products, right? We're buying feelings, emotions, beliefs about ourselves. So we're probably going to buy the toothpaste that maybe helps with our tooth sensitivity, but we're like, we're also buying the feeling of minty fresh breath, a whiter smile, a more beautiful smile. Yeah. I'm more beautiful. I look more youthful because I don't have coffee stains. Like, this is the reality. And I think when you can identify certain patterns related to those thoughts and emotions you're wanting to buy through that experience, and also some triggers that are maybe triggering you to hop on your favorite app, go see what your favorite influencer is touting. I tell you, it's exhausting. 90 seconds, like I said, I think it was maybe earlier, another podcast episode, I logged into Instagram yesterday for 90 seconds, and like instantly I felt fat, old, like I had, like I saw before and after of a fitness, you know, person. And I was her before looks like my now. I felt so bad about myself. And guess what? There's always, like you said, there's always like, I there's a product to buy. I can buy her fitness program. I can buy the promise and aspiration of a healthier me, healthier body, and a six pack. And then I have to be so anchored in my truth, which I know this is my truth. We always laugh about that, my husband and I. You have to be so anchored in your core values is really what it is. Right. I am good enough. I'm good enough.
Yeah.
I don't need another lipstick. It's this exhaustive pursuit of perfection, whether it's our homes and especially our looks. And boys, I'm hitting 38. It's even more pressure than it was
45
for me a couple years. And guess what? The algorithm knows, girl. Oh, it's God. Like,
it knew a long
Katie's
time ago.
Katie's 38. She's feeling very vulnerable right now. Yeah. Let's give her some, you know, dermatologists showing a before and after of a face that, you know, it's oh my God, I have wrinkles. What? You know, Katie, it's too much. And so I just want to share that because again, it's playing to our psyche. Marketing dollars, Target, Walmart, companies, influencers, they know mm-hmm. your vulnerability standpoints. They know what you want. They know how you want to feel. Right. And you and I, we're selling less. We're like, less unplugged, is where it is, people.
Let go. Yeah.
What's your version of enough? And I know this was about dopamine, but again, like that's just a granular part of it. I think we understand and respect the dopamine, but we can also get off the hamster wheel when we decide I've had enough. I've had enough of these beliefs. They're not mine to begin with. I don't care if I have wrinkles. I don't care if I do a little bit, but I'm not there yet. Again, no right or wrong. This is where we need to ensure, does this feel aligned with my life right now?
Yeah.
Or is this coming from external pressure? Right. And it's hard to figure out what's true sometimes. It's like, well, I don't want wrinkles. But and then it's like, well, why do I care about wrinkles? If no one in our country or culture talked about wrinkles, none of us would care.
No one would care.
And but we justify it and say, well, but I will look more youthful. Who cares? Right. Why are we supposed to look 20 when we're 40? We're not. Yeah. I don't know. Tangent. Yeah. But anyway, take it or leave it. Do what you will with that.
I'm with you. I mean, I have a 12-year-old daughter and it's so terrifying to watch like what her friends are into and just how, you know, I just finished reading Anxious Generation.
Yes.
Fantastic book.
Great
book.
People
haven't read it. And it does talk a lot about how, you know, we are so susceptible to these suggestive comparisons. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
These suggestive comparisons that we don't even know. Like, we don't even realize the milliseconds it takes for us to feel bad about ourselves because we're comparing to other people. And we're only comparing to the highlights, right? We're not seeing what's behind the curtain. And we can say that until we're blue in the face. But if you stay steeped in it, it is so much harder to pull out. So, yes, let's let go.
Sorry.
Let's let go of the clutter in our lives, whether that's the stuff, which gives us then the bandwidth to feel a little bit better about ourselves, to then have a little more space and bandwidth to say, I don't want to spend my whole day on Instagram. I have more control over my life. I don't feel so bad that I feel like I just need to escape into a doom scroll. So again, back to this holistic approach, it's not just about your stuff. It's how you feel in your life, and your stuff is just a really great physical starting point for you to start having more space in your life. Yes?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. 100%. Hit the nail on the head.
Awesome. Katie, well, people are going to want to follow up, read your book, do all of these fun things. So tell them, where can they find you and where can they get your book?
Come hang out on Instagram. You will not see any picture perfect homes on Instagram on my account. It's under Katie Joy Wells, and I'm just super real, and you can see my wrinkles that are forming and some of my gray hair, and I didn't wash my hair today, and it's okay. Like, I'm just here to show up authentically, and we do the best we can. Also, the podcast Maximize Minimalist, I do episodes every Wednesday. And yes, the book is really designed to be a companion. I just can't reiterate enough. This is a life skill. You will be ready to tackle superficial clutter. There's a chapter on all the four main clutter types. And then you can reach back for it when you're ready for the scarcity. When you're ready, like, what's the strategy? And, you know, how can we do a little reflection in the process to move through some of these stories that, you know, we've unconsciously taken it as our own? Really beautiful. So check it out. And immediately practical stuff as well as like the deeper layers. And I just think it's a beautiful book to, again, give you the opportunity to anchor to your truth, your core values, what you want, finding that harmony between, you know, what's being projected from either side, you know, the it's never going to be enough and like bye, 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 or the minimalist side. And it's really beautiful. It's going to help in so many ways.
Yeah. And just to remind everyone, it's called Making Home Your Happy Place. All right. So we'll check that out wherever books are sold. And then my favorite way to close out every episode is with three rapid fire questions. So number one, what does clutter-free mean to you?
Clutter-free to me means that I would say the majority of the items in my home are actively supporting me, my lifestyle, and my goals and my families.
Love that. All right. Number two, what is making you happy right now or in this season of life?
So for the holidays this year, every year, again, speaking to the ongoing conversation and the beauty in that is for the last several years, we'll talk to my kids, like, do you want an experience or do you want stuff?
Yeah.
And for the last several years, they're like, maybe a few things, which is a couple books, this and that. This year, they're just like, we want to go skiing. So my husband took them out for their very first ski trip out west. They get back today. And, you know, it was literally such a beautiful thing to FaceTime them. Like, it makes me, like, cry. Like, they made so many memories. And I think, like, dang, this, you don't have to take a trip to Colorado, you know, to do that. I mean, we take hikes on the weekend and do all these things, but a truly memorable, like, big trip out west. And they know, even at 9 and 10 years old, they'll tell me, like, yeah, like, don't even worry about stocking stuffers. I was like, thank goodness, because I hate stocking stuffers. You know, they're like, we just a trip, if that's possible. And to see their hearts and they're smiling and they're creating these memories, and for them to feel that benefit of, like, this is what we're weighing against sometimes. I'm not saying all physical gifts are bad by any means, but it is so reassuring to see, like, I think there's so many times in parenting where we're like, am I doing this right? Yeah. Am I messing my kids up? Are they going to understand what I'm trying to teach them? Because it doesn't seem like it. And this was a really beautiful, reassuring moment where it's like, okay, they're getting it, you know, they're getting it.
That's so precious and so sweet and clearly filled with emotion. I love that. Yeah. Okay, so number three, what's one small step you recommend listeners take today?
Pick one surface area. One surface area that's been nagging you. Could be your kitchen counter, kitchen island, entryway table, somewhere you see every day, you walk past it and you're like, oh, I got to do that. Oh, that's annoying me. Right. And start there. Just set a timer, grab a trash bag, get a donation bin set up in your home immediately as well. So you can immediately just tackle some of that clutter. And again, that action creates that motivation and momentum that creates the belief that you can do this. You are capable, no matter how busy or tired or exhausted you might be. Totally hear that. And it proves to your brain that peace is possible, and that even though you might have messy kids and a messy partner, there is a big element of your home that you can control. And when you do start clearing some of that clutter out, you will feel more at ease, more peaceful, and more calm, and more joyful.
Katie, thank you so much. That was beautiful. What a wonderful way to end the episode. All right. You have a wonderful day. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, what do you think of that episode? I loved this chat with Katie, and as I said a couple times, I could have talked to her all day, so we'll definitely have to make sure she comes back on the show at another time, but I love getting to talk to people who are also doing this work and helping people just understand that more is not the answer. The least amount of stuff is not the answer either. It really comes down to the feeling that you have in your home and allowing you to show up as your full authentic self in your home, in a home that supports you, that is an environment that you want to be in, and one that supports your family too, right? We talked about how we're not the only ones living here, and we need to figure out what works for everyone. And I think Katie's holistic approach to decluttering, and mine as well, is one of the best ways that we can create that environment that is going to cultivate the relationships we want in our lives with the people that we love the most. All right, but I would love to know what you thought about this episode and if there was anything that stood out for you. If so, come join us. You can join us in the comments on Spotify. You can join me on YouTube. You can join our conversation on Instagram. I will have a post over there that Katie will be part of as well. And so you can get answers from both of us over there and just come and have the conversation, and we would love to chat with you. Of course, thanks to Katie for joining us on the show and sharing some of her lovely ideas and thoughts and tips around how we can declutter, and her personal story as well. It was very motivating and inspiring. And of course, thanks to you for joining us on the show today too. I couldn't do this show without you, and I really appreciate that you make the show part of your weekly routine. Come back next week when I will be chatting with Shira Gill. She is the world-renowned organizing expert and the best-selling author of 3 books. We're going to be talking about her newest one, Life Styled. It's going to be a fantastic conversation, and you are not going to want to miss it. Until then, take care. Keep things simple. Start by just clearing one flat surface, like Katie told us to do today, and just know that I believe in you. I know you can do anything that you set your mind to. I'm Deanna Yates, and you've been listening to Wanna Be Clutter Free. I'll see you next week. Cheers.